Welcome.
Welcome. This is Magic the Amateuring, episode 29.
You know when you love it, or you're listening for the first time, and then you don't know it or love it.
Or you're tied up to a chair.
Or you know when you hate it, you're listening out of spite. We welcome you.
Oh my goodness, I hate this podcast so much. It's time to play it again.
I'm Ben. I am sort of the veteran of this podcast. I've taught my friends Maria.
Hi.
And Megan.
Hey guys.
How to play the game of Magic the Gathering, and they got super duper addicted.
Yeah, we did.
And now it's like I have children that I never asked for.
Hi, Dad.
Hey, Dad.
And they're always asking, like, how to open a booster pack.
Dad, can't you take us to draft tonight? Come on, Dad.
Dad, can you teach me?
Guys, I have a life outside of you.
Well, I need to learn how to draft without these extra training rules.
Dad, come on. I just want to be able to drive standard and not drive limited anymore.
And so this podcast is a chronicle of their journey into adulthood.
Right now, we're about 8, I would say.
Maybe. I feel six or seven.
Okay.
I was trying to think, what's the age where they say that, like, dogs are as smart as you?
What? Dad, never! Two?
It's so hard to pinpoint because of dog years. They just complicate everything.
I'm thinking of the age 2. I think I might still be 2.
Okay.
Or just dumb.
I have good taught point. Dogs to play magic before, and some of them were pretty good.
Are you the genesis of the painting where the dogs are sitting around a table playing magic?
That was me. I was one of those dogs, but in disguise.
Great painting. You guys, that's if this amazing. Painting isn't real, why
it
isn't it real?
It needs to be real. It has to be. I'm going to Google it while we continue talking.
All right. Well, we have a great show coming up for you today. We have a special guest on the show.
I'm excited.
Yes. And he hasn't played the game for a long time, mm-hmm. and he wants to know what it will take to get back into the game. So if you're one of those players who hasn't played for a long time, maybe you've been listening, but you haven't really been out there playing, or you played in the 90s and you want to start again, this is the episode for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All of the other episodes can also be for you, but this one is like, we researched a target audience, we've marketed right. it, we had a test audience.
We hit they you in the it. Neck with a dart, and we dragged you back. And we scanned your brain.
I thought you were going to say we searched Target and we bought you the perfect episode.
That too.
This episode is so you. That's what we're getting at.
That's it. All right, everybody. It's time to welcome our special guest, Mr. Fred Bukema.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Fred. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I'm excited.
I know. You're like a relic.
I am.
I mean that in the best possible way.
I'm an antiquity.
Ooh. Oh, maybe you guys don't get that.
That'd be topical maybe. In 1995.
We don't get it.
There was an old set named Antiquities.
Oh.
It had a lot of artifacts in it.
We already learned something this episode.
Yeah, we did.
So, Fred.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about when you first got into magic?
I was in high school and...
Love it.
Paint a picture. Were you a nerd?
I was a nerd. I was a band nerd. And nice. I was super skinny. Yeah.
Tuba?
No, trumpet, actually.
Nice.
Oh, that's the nice top of the echelon.
And I was about as tall as I am now and weighed a little more than half as much as I do
I
now.
I love it.
Cute.
You're in marching band who's keeping the calories
yes.
off.
Yes, exactly. I got into Magic during my sophomore year, so that was like 94, 95. And that was sort of right when it was becoming nerd mainstream, if that
yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
And
it was taken off so fast, it was hard to get cards, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was, in terms of the expansion sets and mm-hmm. and also the main game, it was... Right as they were going from, correct me if I'm wrong, from like Unlimited into 4th Edition.
Mm-hmm.
4th Edition came out while I was playing.
And I think it was actually, so Unlimited went into Revised,
oh,
which was
yep.
like 3rd Edition.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Legends had just happened, and I think The Dark was out when
yeah,
I
yeah.
was starting to play, and then it was like Fallen Empires, Ice Age and Homelands, and I was sort of like, that was my chunk of time.
Yeah,
and that was about it.
Cool.
I'm intrigued by you saying it was hard to get cards.
Yeah.
That
These
is so...
These guys have, they have no, no concept, and I don't really either, because when I started playing, it was around like Revised Fallen Empires, mm-hmm. and that was when they were starting to figure out how to make sure they made enough shit that they could actually keep it in stores.
Yeah, when you're like, it was hard to get cards, and I'm like, it's hard to get cards. How did you guys know I was so broke right now?
They, like, the big thing was that the earlier editions, because they didn't know how popular it was going to be, they had printed them in more limited numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, at the time that I was getting into it, which I think was actually, it sounds like it was kind of around the same time.
Yeah, probably. I was in middle school.
The cards and, like, the individual cards and the boosters from, like, Legends and Antiquities were really hard to come by. Mm-hmm. And there were some... Like, if you went to Games by James out at Southdale or something, mm-hmm. they would have, like, one box of Legends boosters for, like, $25 each.
Nice.
Because they were just... I mean, and they were out of print at that point. They weren't making them, but...
$25.95 was, like, $3,000.
I know.
Tell me about it.
You'd have to take out a loan. but... and the other thing was they... Like, this was kind of coming after... The baseball card market had just completely collapsed because people were speculating on baseball cards in the early 90s. Like, all these old cards from, like, mid-century had become super expensive and collector's items, and so people were just snapping everything up, and the companies were catering to that, and it collapsed that market, and so then people were looking for other things that were collectible. And for a little while, so
maybe
there were speculators.
Maybe this X-Men comic book will be worth $1 million someday.
Oh, I get it.
And so, like, those early sets of Magic, once they started to become more popular, because they were rare, mm-hmm. it just, like, it was...
Yeah.
I think that's exciting, though. I mean, that adds a real excitement to the game. Like, oh, you know, when you get a great card, you mm-hmm. really... I think it would be doubled.
It does. And, like, there's stuff that was... There were rares at that time that it was super exciting if you would get it because it was harder to come by. It also meant, though, that the... game was kind of ruled by cash. Like, if you had the money to buy the rare cards to go to the store and buy individually, like, the stuff that had been out of print that they were no longer putting in the sets, like the Moxes or any of that early stuff.
Sure.
Or even the powerful stuff that was still in the game,
mm-hmm.
Like, you could just rule any game that you played because you bought your way to the victory.
Is that kind of what got you out of it?
Well...
Or did you start noticing girls?
Well, a little from column A, a little from column B. It was the money thing was a big part of it.
Right.
I also didn't have a ton of people that I played with.
Sure, yeah.
Like, I played a bunch in on the track team. I was on the track team for one season in high school, and there were a bunch of like nerdy track guys who played Magic, and so I played a bunch with them, and there was some overlap between that group and some of the guys in band, and so if we had like a band lock-in, I'd play Magic there.
Nice.
And those were really the places that I played.
Okay.
And some of those guys graduated, and I kind of just I moved away from the game a little bit. And
did that three-way Venn diagram of groups of people ever have, like, a triathlon where it's like, okay, you're going to run the 200-meter hurdles, and then you're going to march while playing something by John Sousa, and then we're going to sit down and we're going to battle?
That would be fantastic. Like, just running at each other from opposite ends of the field.
This is an extracurricular activity that schools should have now.
That's a great idea.
It should be. They should force the bands to do hurdles with their instruments, and they should force the runners to march in formation.
I like it.
And then, like, for the third round, they play Magic.
Yes. So it sounds like you were mostly doing, like, casual games with friends as opposed to, like, tournaments and stores
I never really got hardcore into, like, tournaments. And, like, I would go to, there were a couple of stores at the mall there was, well, and there was Phoenix Games right around the corner here in Uptown.
Sure. Minneapolis.
Yes. And
rest in peace.
You know, I would go in there looking for, you know, I would buy some boosters and I would see the guys playing, and it was a level that I was not prepared for.
I
was not ready to make that plunge.
Was the tournament scene a big deal in the 90s, Ben, do you know?
Well, so the whole explosion around the cards, I think, was not at all driven. It didn't seem to me like that I was driven by the tournament scene. Mm-hmm. It seemed like that was mostly like casual people that, you know, wanted to play with their friends or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that was around the time when they were starting to do like Magic Pro Tours and stuff like that, and bigger tournaments. But I don't think that was really like driving the whole thing. I think it was more the result of the popularity.
Yeah, it's almost like that's the way that there was order formed out of the chaos of the game's popularity.
I think what happened is Wizards took a look at the game and they're like, you know, obviously we have something really special here, and they wanted to figure out how do we convert this into something with some legs. Mm-hmm. You know, like most games die off because people run out of people to play with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we start sanctioning events, then people will always have people to play with. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think it's obviously worked for them since we're here 20 years later.
Here we are. Yeah. Was drafting a thing back then?
No.
Not that I knew of at all. Like, no. I don't think I even really heard of drafting as a mechanic for games until, I don't know, a few years ago. And it wasn't in the context of Magic, but like board games and card games that come with a set deck where you're drafting from a common pool. And then like finding out that, oh, they use that in Magic too, and to find out how mostly from you guys actually, how the tournaments work with the boosters and passing that around.
Yeah,
and everything.
They did not design any of those sets to be drafted. I don't know if, you know, people might have done something similar, like just for fun, but I think it wasn't until either like Tempest or Mirage when they actually designed it, like, yes, you, like, these are designed to be drafted.
Was that like in the early 2000s, or
I think it was like right after the Ice Age alliances, like right after those sets.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they started doing kind of the modern format where they had blocks, and there'd be usually three sets to a block, and they were designed to work together and draft together and that stuff.
Now, how does that work? I have a lot of questions sort of about how things work today. You know, I've heard bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. But like, so the sets, I guess what I was used to in like 95 was everybody had their collection of cards and was constructing decks out of those and trying to find combinations that work. Yeah. But they didn't have, like you said, the blocks where stuff was designed to work sort of thematically together.
Right.
So does, like, are there still people who are playing, who are doing tournaments with, like, I've got my killer deck that I'm going to bring from home and, like, plop it down on the table and...
There's so now, obviously, the internet is a much bigger thing.
Right.
Everyone has, like, access to these deck lists. Back in 95, when there were big tournaments, I heard that, you know, people would show up and just have no idea, like, what other people were going to show up with.
Yeah.
Like, it could be anything. A deck full of
I kind of am a little sad that that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, it's totally...
People are like, what is that?
It's totally a different environment now. So usually there's, you know, in a given format in a tournament, there's like, you know, maybe 5 to 10 deck archetypes that, like, you're expecting to see. And then people can still show up with whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But usually it's one of those archetypes that's like... gonna be
just because people kind of know what they're doing enough to like,
right,
I'm gonna show up with something that has some track record rather than just throwing some crap together in my garage.
Right. And so usually it's like these decks are kind of battling it out in this metagame where, depending on how many of deck A there are in the tournament, maybe deck B is the best. It's like a rock, paper, scissors type thing. And then
does that make you sad, Fred?
A little bit. I mean, I feel like there's a little bit of innocence lost there. I mean, I was like, there were the high school guys who were playing, and, you know, it was new and people were just kind of figuring it out. And so the first few times that I played, it was just, okay, I bought the starter set that's got all five colors in it. And that's my one, like, that's my deck. It's got
that's
five colors and it's completely unbalanced. And that's what I'm going to play with. And I remember I taught community school based out of my high school during the summers, and it was really popular with the kids in that community school. And we're talking like 8 to 12 year olds there, who just, you know, they treated their cards like crap. And I've got a story about that when we get to the deck that I brought. But, you know,
did you steal all the cards in this deck from children?
No. I got rolled, and we'll talk about it.
Nice. Shit.
I have one card in particular to show you that I got rolled for.
Nice.
They would just, you know, they would throw everything together in a deck, and, you know, there was no rhyme or reason.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, this is a cool card. I don't like this card. I'm going to
Yeah, toss I remember this one. I remember playing as like a 13-year-old, mm-hmm. and just like having no concept of why like certain stuff was better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, why is this removal stuff so good? Like, why can't I have a spell that gains me a bunch of life, mm-hmm. and does nothing else? Those are the days. Simpler time.
Yeah.
And it was actually right about the point where I was starting to get, like, that I was starting to figure out the combinations and, like, that you could do something more with it, that I was like, I think I'm done. I had built, like, 3 or 4 decks at the end of that time that really kind of reached that, and then I got out of it.
So when you were playing with your friends, did you guys have like a format that you followed? Like, was anything off limits for what you throw in your deck?
I don't think there was anything that was off limits, and like none of that group were throwing down enough cash to like
to have the cards that would have been banned or anything.
I think at some point somebody had bought a copy of The Duelist, which was the magazine they had back in those early days. And
like the two lists, or like the man who fights?
Like a person who fights. Actually, I've got an ad here. I've got the...
I love it.
I've got the... Look at that. Yes.
Oh, let's
yes,
take a second to read it. The Duelist, the official Deckmaster magazine.
Yeah. It's got a wicked like elf-looking guy who's got some nice chest hair going
on. He is a ripped elf rocking like a mohawk and a goatee.
Yeah.
That's insane.
And a single earring.
Let's
That's
see.
What we all wanted to be.
In the topics. 90s.
Topics this week. Frequently asked questions about Magic the Gathering legends.
Oh.
Ooh.
Oh. Oh.
What happens if there's two legends?
Multiplayer Magic variants. Emperor rules and melee magic.
Does that say jihad?
Oh my god.
It was a simpler time, you guys.
Yeah, it sure before, does.
It was before everything changed.
Jihad. Notes from playtest.
Tournament legal deck strategies.
Oh, revised edition and legends card lists.
I'm just looking at this guy.
Yeah. And look, he's got his lady friend.
Yeah.
Who's wearing like some sort of like winged tiara.
So these magazines were, there was this one, and there were a couple others that were made by like other companies.
This one called Scry.
Yeah, Scry.
We talked about Scry on the show before.
And wait. InQuest.
Okay.
Yeah. They'd have like price lists, and this is like the only way that information like traveled between groups.
I love it.
Right?
I kind of love it. You know, it's like more of a mystery.
That's awesome. That's a totally 90s magazine too. It's like green and, green and pale purple on the cover.
And so it's like there would be like this trickle of information from the magazines and like the early prototypical America Online World Wide Web. Yeah. And then it was just like people chatting amongst their classmates, and that was all the information you got. But at some point we had found out that at that time, at least, the tournament rules were that you couldn't have more than 4 of any card other than basic lands in your deck. So we had that as a rule.
Yeah.
And
that's good. That brings a little sanity.
Yes. And you can't, it has to be at least 40 cards. And I don't know whether there was an upper limit. The deck that I still have is like 60 some odd cards.
Yeah.
But, so I don't know what else we might have followed, but it was something like that.
Okay, cool. So that's an interesting thing, because like, the original rule books actually did say, they just said, like, it had to be at least 40 cards.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, I don't think, any mention of the 4 of limit.
Yeah.
And there was no mention of 60 card decks. And it was pretty early on that they said, okay, for tournaments, there's a 4-of limit, and the minimum is actually 60 cards.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's for constructed formats. So, and I don't know why, like, that seemed like such a weird thing, because, like, I remember reading the rules and being like, oh, 40 cards, and then everyone's like, you have to play 60 cards. It's like, what? Like, why? But yeah, it was a weird thing, and I remember, like, having decks, like, a deck that was just all of my cards.
Yep, yep.
Because it's like, I didn't even understand, like, why you would want to have the minimum amount of cards. Like, that was...
Wouldn't you want to have access to all your cards?
Right. Like, I'm never going
to
run out.
That makes sense to me.
Teenagers don't understand probabilities.
Oh, no. We learned the hard way, though.
So what questions do you have for how the game is nowadays, now that you've been unthawed?
So, I am the frozen caveman lawyer magic player.
Yeah.
I guess I'm wondering, it sounds like what you guys are saying is that there's not the same sort of rarity attached to, like, I need to find this specific card and I'm going to pay $35 for whatever it is.
There are certainly expensive cards, and if you want to buy, like, a good deck, it can, and you have nothing, then it can definitely be like $300, $400, $500 or up from there. There's a few different formats. Back in the day, originally there was like type 1 and type 2.
Diabetes.
Yeah, it was similar.
Those are the kinds of diabetes.
It was a simpler time. It was a simpler time.
Magic all the time.
Now we have modern diabetes, legacy diabetes. That's when you get it from your dad.
There's like standard diabetes, which is just normal. Limited diabetes, so, which is definitely the best.
You can get rid of it.
Constructed diabetes.
So type one was basically the format where you could use all of your cards.
Okay.
Some cards were restricted to one card per deck. And the only cards that were banned were cards like... that, you know, referred to ante or something weird like that. Do you guys know what ante is?
From Mad Ante?
No.
You used it from poker.
Yes.
Oh, I was thinking like your aunt.
So like in this original rule book, it describes how before the game starts, you take the top card of your deck and that's what you're playing for.
What?
And the idea was like, this is how people would get cards, and like they'd play against other people, and like
it was like some Pokemon shit.
Right. Yeah. Some Pokemon type shit, and like you know, like maybe I flip over a forest, and you're flipping over your best rare, and then all of a sudden the stakes are ridiculous.
Oh my god.
I know. I don't. I never played a game with Ante.
Yeah, I never did either.
I don't think anyone ever did.
It's just dumb.
That's why they got rid of it.
There were also cards where it would be like, you like add another card to your ante, draw 7 cards or something ridiculous like that.
Holy shit.
Yeah, which is like if you draw 7 more cards, there's no way you can lose.
Pretty much.
So that was type 1, and then that eventually became it's known as vintage today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically the same. There's a lot more. There's a lot of restricted cards in that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's...
You can buy it at Rigstock.
Yeah, totally. There was also type 2 back in the day, and that was... I don't know when they started doing this, but I think originally it was like Ice Age and on from there.
Okay.
And then at some point they set it to being basically the last 2 blocks, which would be the last 2 years worth of sets.
Mm-hmm.
And so it, you know, on the one hand, it like kind of would reset the field every once in a while, so the people who had the older cards didn't have, you know, a total advantage over the newer people.
Sure.
And then it also helped Wizards of the Coast sell their new sets because you had to play them. So... those are like the original ones, and then so today, standard is the most popular format.
Yeah.
There's also there's a legacy format, which is similar to vintage in that you can use all of the sets still, but instead of having restricted cards, the two powerful stuff they've just banned.
Right.
And then there's also another format that's kind of in between called modern. Which goes back to like 9th edition or something. And it's like everything from that point forward is legal with a bunch of banned cards because when you get a when you there's been so many cards printed that you can't have them all out there just interacting. It'd be like a zoo.
Where like all the doors all are open. Animals.
Dogs yeah. and cats.
They just go together. Crazy.
All that's like, left is the red panda.
Yeah.
It's like elephants and tigers going at each other.
The red panda stayed sleeping in the tree the whole time. It's the only one left.
Nice. Well done, red panda.
Nice. It knows that its skill set is mostly confined to being adorable. And so
yeah.
Quite right.
It played to its strengths.
It really did.
Played to its oats.
So if you're wondering, you know, is your old deck still playable?
Yeah.
I think the answer is that it probably is in Legacy.
Hold on a second. What kind of deck does he have over there?
Oh, well, this is...
He brought a lovely deck with him in a lovely old box.
It's been sitting in a dresser drawer for 18 years.
I love it. Just absorbing the mana
like
from
a
your socks.
Sock?
Yeah. So there are some sweet old cards in here. Hymn to Torak, this is a ridiculous card. Okay, I'm going to read this card to you guys.
Okay.
All right, here it goes. It costs 2 black mana, black. It's a sorcery. It's from Fallen Empires. The H is lowercase.
Yep.
Target player discards 2 cards at random from his or her hand. If target player does not have enough cards, his or her entire hand is discarded. They don't feel the need to add
right, no,
to like,
I
specify that stuff anymore.
It seems pretty cheap.
Yeah, it's very cheap. And I'm just going to point out, so today, like the modern equivalent to this card is Mind Rot. It costs 3 mana and target player discards 2 cards. And they get to choose. This is at random.
And there are 4 of those motherfuckers
there
in there.
There are 4 of these in your deck.
God!
You can play one on turn 2.
Ouch.
You can, and then I'm just going to point out that you can actually play one on turn 1 because there's another card in this deck called Dark Ritual.
This deck sounds like a black-based deck.
It is.
It really does.
It's super black. I see only swamps in this deck. And I have you guys seen this card? The Dark Ritual?
Oh my god.
Have you never seen this?
No.
All right. Read this card. There's a lot of weird stuff on this card.
It costs 1 black.
Yeah.
Add 3 black to your mana pool.
What kind of spell is it?
It's an interrupt. So
they don't
like
have those anymore.
They don't have interrupts anymore?
Is that
really?
Like in, what do you say, this an instant then?
Yeah. They're just all instants now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was never, it was always kind of fuzzy to me, like,
yeah.
I didn't understand that there was any difference between interrupts and instants.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that a little bit with the rule, when we get into rules changes.
Okay.
But yeah, this card was ridiculous. Like, it let you could put out stuff on turn 1.
Well, and I remember reading somewhere that in the original core set of cards, they had one card in each of the colors that was you pay 1 of that color and you get 3 of something.
Right.
And they were really unbalanced because the black one was awesome. You could play a 3 3 drop. Is that, am I using
that
word?
Oh, yes, correct.
You can play a 3 drop. Well, I've been listening to this podcast where they talk about all this stuff. You could play a 3 drop on your first turn, and then like the white one was you pay the healing salve. You pay 1.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 1 white mana to get 3 life back.
Right. Or prevent 3 damage.
And wasn't the, what's the blue one?
The blue one's
crazy, isn't it?
The blue one is an ancestral recall. 1 blue mana, instant, draw 3 cards.
What?
And that's one of the power 9. Is
it's
that
one of the
right?
power 9. That's one of the most expensive cards. Yeah, that's like super banned.
Super banned.
It's been taken out of the game, and it is never.
It's been
coming back.
Hit with a shovel and buried in the desert.
It's in Guantanamo.
Nice.
Exactly. So yeah. So this deck looks pretty sweet. And let's see. I'm gonna find. Do you have Hypnotic Spectres?
Yeah,
in this
there's I think at least one of them in there. This deck is largely based around stuff that was in Fallen Empires because that I think was one of the first sets where they were really trying to make stuff sort of within the set work thematically. Like they had for each color 2 different factions that had a bunch of cards that worked together, and so the combos were pretty apparent to start with.
Yeah,
and it played well. Like the black cards in Fallen Empires played really well with some of the earlier core set ones.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at this Hypnotic Spectre. Just in case the Hymn to Torak aren't making you discard enough, this is a 3 mana 2/2 with flying.
Oh, God.
And whenever an opponent summon Spectre, flying. An opponent damaged by Spectre discards a card at random from his or her hand. Ignore this effect if opponent has no cards in hand. So this is getting a card at random every turn.
Nice.
And this deck I tried to fill with as much like make your opponent discard or get burned because they have too few or too many cards.
I think I've seen what's the enchantment that goes with that? The rack.
Yes. I've got a rack in here and artifact. I used to have a black vice, which was the companion to the rack.
Oh my god, this little guy's getting torn apart.
Yeah, read that card for us.
If opponent has fewer than 3 cards in hand during his or her upkeep, the rack does 1 damage to opponent for each card fewer than 3.
It costs 1.
The companion to that is the black vice, which also costs 1, and it does the same kind of deal, but for more than 4 cards.
So
if you have 5 or more, you get damage for how many over 4 you have.
Yeah, that was I remember that was like a classic strategy. Everyone thought they were so clever. It's like, aha!
I know I did.
This card will work with my other card.
So can he play this in Legacy?
I believe all the cards in this deck are still legal in Legacy, yes.
Well, Brad.
I don't know how many Legacy tournaments. I think probably like once a week they have some kind of Legacy tournament. This deck might not hold up.
I'm sure it wouldn't.
Yeah, to some of the other stuff that's going on.
Because you could probably use Moxes and stuff in those tournaments.
No.
Or are those still banned?
No, those would be legal. You could have one of each in a Vintage deck.
Oh, okay.
And like Vintage decks are insane. Like they'll they'll win on turn 1 or turn 2 like every time.
Is that the one where people are like throwing cards and...
Oh,
it's not quite
Chaos
that bad.
Orb.
Not quite that bad. I believe the Chaos Orb is banned in all formats now.
Damn it.
You will never be able to throw a card and get in some damage unless you hit someone with it.
The other combo I want to point out on this deck, which I love, is the Breathing Pit, Lord of the Pit combo. It's like, it's right there in the name for you. So Lord of the Pit, this is a real badass. He's a 7 mana, 7/7, flying trample. You must sacrifice one of your own creatures during your upkeep, or Lord of the Pit does 7 damage to you. You may still attack with Lord of the Pit, even if you failed to sacrifice a creature. Lord of the Pit may not be sacrificed to itself. One of the big improvements they've made now is much more standardized templating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just get out the old typewriter and type away until everyone has to completely understand what this card means.
Well,
do you understand what I'm saying? If not, just
keep reading.
There was a card, I remember seeing a picture of a card very early on that was just like a playtest card of Magic.
Yeah.
And it said, on your next turn, you can't lose the game or something like that.
Is this the time walk thing where it's like you lose next turn?
Or there's a card that says,
yeah.
There's an instant that says you cannot lose the turn. Like, you cannot lose the game this turn, and your opponent cannot win the game this turn.
It wasn't that. It was, and now I'm not going to remember, but it was something where it could be interpreted either you win the next turn.
Yeah, I remember reading that.
So the card Time Walk basically says take an extra turn. And the original wording was your opponent loses their next turn.
That's it.
And it's like, wait, you mean they lose the game or their turn?
Right.
Yeah. Yes, the legend.
That's amazing.
So you were talking about, you got the Lord of the Pit and then the Breeding Pit.
The Breeding Pit goes with him. I mean, this Lord of the Pit guy, he's sweet and all, but seems a little dangerous, right? If you run out of dudes, he's
going to
do
7
damage. And that's why you get a Breeding Pit. During your upkeep, pay black or bury Breeding Pit. At the end of your turn, put a Thrall token into play. Treat this token as a 0/1 black creature. The thralls bred at a terrifying pace. In the end, they overwhelmed the Order of the Ebon Hand.
Thralls be fucking.
Yeah.
They're like the rabbits of the Magic universe.
Thralls.
Thralls.
Dutiful thrall, whole new meaning.
Hey, now.
This is another unstoppable combo.
if you can get both of those individual cards.
I know. I love how, like, you have to play Lord of the Pit. Like, you, if you play Breeding Pit first, then you need 9 mana before you can cast Lord of the Pit. But usually, I mean, you're just casting this Lord of the Pit off, like, four dark rituals on turn one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a big-ass gamble.
I love it. I also love the Icy Manipulator. 1 mana, tap it, it's an artifact, tap target, artifact, creature, or land. That was a sweet
one. That was one that when I started playing was, like, it was no longer part of the game. They had stopped including it. And so it was really rare and really expensive, but then they brought it back with Ice Age.
Yeah.
And I was very excited. Yeah. And I specifically sought that out.
Yeah.
Because the other really cheap-ass combo in here is the Icy Manipulator and the Royal Assassin. Because the Icy Manipulator, you use that to tap one of your opponent's creatures, and then your Royal Assassin can kill any tapped creature. And
how are you gonna win, bro?
The Royal Assassin, that's the card that I have it's in pretty terrible condition because I got it from one of my students at the community school. And he had an extra one. And I was like, hey, you've got an extra. Would you like to trade? And he rolled me. I don't even remember what cards, but it was such an unbalanced trade, and I kept my cards in pretty good shape, and he gave me this ratty ass Royal Assassin. I had to get a black marker and, like, color in some spots that had gone white on the back of it.
Classic.
Where is that? Oh, there he is.
There you go.
Yeah,
oh,
wow. So
that's a sign of a well-loved card.
Oh, wow.
Black marker around the edges of the card.
Oh, my gosh.
That's amazing.
Wow. I love it. The other classic card in here, you guys, you ladies know the card Doomblade, right?
Oh, for sure. Dice of Doomblade.
There's a Twitter account of a guy. His account is Dies to Doomblade. Hold on, you don't get to see this card yet until we're done talking about Doomblade.
Okay.
What's Doomblade, you guys?
Doomblade is a card. It's costs 2 mana. It's 1 black. It's an instant, and it says destroy target non-black creature.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is based on this card. Terror.
The granddaddy.
Terror.
Take a look at that art.
That is terrifying.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So a couple differences.
Oh, my God.
I know, right?
That is...
The art used to get real.
That is scary and dark.
I know.
Yeah, Barry's target creature cannot target black creatures or artifact creatures. And Barry was basically...
Cannot be regenerated.
No.
Okay.
Which is not... They don't use the term berries anymore.
Okay.
Because
what do they call it?
They say it cannot be regenerated.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was just
so
like
either dead or exiled.
It was like a confusing term, and then also they don't do as much anymore where it cannot be regenerated.
Okay.
Because like, what's the point? It's like, what's the point of regenerate you guys if I'm just dying all the time?
Yeah.
I love this deck. I feel like I want to play a game against you with this deck.
I brought some decks.
Nice. Let's do it. Fred.
Yes.
We've thawed you out.
Yes.
Do you want us to put you back in the cryo chamber? Or are you going to start playing Magic again?
This scary new world confuses me.
Yeah, yeah.
With your flying cars and your jetpacks.
Hoverboards?
Yes, your hoverboards.
Yeah, dust repellent paper.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But I know that
creatures
with
hovering can only be blocked by creatures with hovering.
If you freeze me again, I'm just gonna go back and Biff Tannen's gonna have taken over the town. And
yep.
Your mom's gonna be married to him.
Can't afford that.
Nope.
I mean, I the thing that I like about what it sounds like Magic is today is like I feel like the barrier to entry is a lot lower than it used to be.
Yeah.
And that you can go and do like if you play around with some friends who have some cards. Mm-hmm. And sort of learn how the game works, you could go to, you know, a draft tournament and it's just, you know, whatever you have to pay to play rather than I need to buy a bunch of cards
and
research in Scry how to build a deck.
I mean, looking at these, they have so much text on them and they're confusing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as, you know, a fairly new player.
They used to have, you know, they'd print Magic cards where the text would be a smaller size.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the font was a smaller size, like...
Yikes.
Like
you, and like the, I feel like the you know there's some in this deck that I brought that have you know big chunks of text, like they've got some paragraphs there.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing some like in some of the really rare cards where it's just like a wall, like it's you know it's completely filling the box at a smaller font. Yeah.
Here's,
okay.
Here's
so
a good one, Ebon Praetor.
All right. Oh my God, this is tiny.
Read it fast.
Here we go. Trample. First strike. During your upkeep, put a -2/-2 counter on Ebon Praetor. You may sacrifice a creature during your upkeep to remove a -2/-2 counter from Ebon Praetor if the creature sacrificed with the roll. Also, put a +1/+0 counter on Ebon Praetor. Only one creature may be sacrificed in this manner each turn.
Only $9.99.
Prices and participation. Maybe.
So they don't do stuff like this anymore. And if they do do it, it's like it's a rare as opposed to a common or something. So because of that. If you go to this pre-release, you know, you pay, it's like $25-$30 or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You get, they give you 6 packs of M14, Magic 2014, and you build a deck out of it. You can use as many basic lands as you want. And then based on that, you play a 40-card deck against other people that have done the same thing.
That sounds like fun, you guys.
It does
it
sound
is.
Like fun,
awesome.
Fred. You should do it. It's not a gateway drug at all.
I have to say, the first thing that Megan and I ever did after learning the basics at the kitchen table with Ben was to play in a draft. And we did a little bit of studying.
But a draft is really, that was trial by fire, man.
It really was. And you know what? We didn't do too bad.
No, we didn't.
You did. You guys did all right.
That's right.
Just fine.
So we're living proof that you can go in pretty cold
and
still
survive.
Come out. Okay. Yeah.
The more you know.
I mean, they only killed the people who did who placed in the very bottom 10.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I actually beat Ben in that tournament.
Yeah.
Nice.
So it can be done.
You didn't beat me.
Well,
you had a better record than me.
Sure.
To be clear.
Sure.
She placed higher.
So I would say they do have these pre-releases. So this is the core set, and they release 4 sets every year, at least. Sometimes they release an extra set, too. But the pre-releases, are, I think, are a great way, you know, if you're looking to get back into it. They're very casual. You know, most people aren't, like, going to these events to try to win it all and bring home all the sweet packs.
Sure.
Except for me.
except for Maria. No one cares if you're like asking questions about the rules or if you're like, oops, I did this thing that doesn't make any sense. So yeah, that's definitely something I recommend if you guys at home are like, I should play Magic again or should I? So that's definitely a place to start.
I picked up the Xbox game.
Duels
of the Planeswalkers.
Oh, that's actually... That's a really good way to get back into it and learn.
Did you get the newest new one, the 2014 one or the 2013 one?
I think I've got like, I've got two of them, but I don't think I have the most recent. I think I've got like 2013 and the one that was undated, the first one
came out. Okay, cool.
And it's very like, it's very puzzly. Like it feels like, and it has like specific puzzles within it, but even like the matches in the game against the AI, it's like you kind of have to know what to expect from the AI and use your cards in the right order.
Yeah.
Otherwise you're going to get hurt fast.
Yeah. Have you been like figuring it out?
I've been, I played a bunch of the first one. I got like, I think maybe halfway or a third through the main like series of opponents. And then I kind of hit a wall.
Yeah.
But I haven't, the one that I just got a little while ago, which I think was the 2013 one, it was on sale. I haven't played much of that yet.
Okay.
But I like it so far.
2014, I played through this weekend.
Oh, wow.
The whole thing?
Correct.
Wow.
God damn, girl.
I was going to say this was like...
Were you hanging out with your family this weekend?
Yeah, you got it. But it was like, you know, I felt a little pride because I wasn't able to do very well in the M13 one or the Duels of the Planeswalkers 2013 one. But this one was just like... Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am.
No problem.
Get it done.
So, Fred.
Yes?
If we're reintroducing you back to society, there's some things you should know.
Okay.
The rules have gone through some changes.
I imagine.
The first... So, there was a redesign with like the way interrupts work.
Okay.
It used to be like... There were like fast effects, and there were certain speeds of fast effects, and like...
only like an interrupt could counter something. And anyway, like they were like, it was really weird. And so they changed it. And so now it's like, whenever you use an ability or an instant, it goes on the stack. And then both players have an opportunity to do more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then if both players pass on that opportunity, the first thing on the stack resolves.
Okay.
And then both players again have a chance to do something, and then the thing on the stack resolves.
So it's sort of like a reverse order of whatever gets stacked up for actions.
Right.
Okay.
So the first in is the last out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So that's kind of how that's all set up, and there's not too much more you need to know about that change.
You sound like you got it.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was like the old way it worked. I don't think anyone ever understood anyway. Like, I know.
Well, the little rule book has all these like examples of like, if this happens, now imagine that this interrupt is played here, but then this guy taps this card, which has an ability that it happens instantly. How do you resolve that? And I remember arguments breaking out in the teacher who coached the track team's room of like, no, it doesn't work that way. This resolves first, so I'm winning.
And they say magic is bad for children. I don't understand.
It teaches them how to fight good.
So there are a couple other changes. There were some terminology changes.
Okay.
So back in your day, the library, the graveyard, those were all terms. Those are still used.
Uh-huh.
But instead of... So there was like... All these cards would say, you know, remove target creature from the game.
Right.
They stopped doing that because they started printing a lot of cards that would be like, remove this creature from the game and then return it at the end, like at the end of your turn. And it was what?
I took it out of the game.
Right.
It literally is not in this game anymore.
I threw it away. I threw it away and now I have to dig through the trash.
I ate it.
So that's now called exile instead. And so if you exile something, it goes into the exile zone. It used to be called the removed from game zone.
So are there still things that can return cards from exile? Or are there?
There are a few things. There's not very many.
Okay.
Wait, is there anything that can just straight up return something from being exiled? There's stuff that can flash it into exile and then bring it back.
There are.
What?
Yeah. What?
Someday, maybe I'll tell you about them.
Okay, Uncle Ben.
Also, the in play, there'd be cards like, when this card comes into play, do this.
Yeah.
Or like, that's now the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was confusing that you would like play, like when you played a card, it was on the stack.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would come into play.
Okay.
So that's the battlefield. And so those cards will say, like, when this creature enters the battlefield, do this.
Mm-hmm.
So those are like, if you see those on cards, it still works the same way. Just make that substitution. And mm-hmm. if you say like comes into play or removed from game, everyone knows what you're talking about. So
mm-hmm.
not a big deal. Another change, this one's not huge, not a huge change, but, there is no longer mana burn.
Oh,
I know.
Really?
I know.
Fred is excited about that one, man.
I remember Mana Burn being like,
yeah.
Like there were decks built around Mana Burn.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, the idea with Mana Burn is if you have tapped to draw mana that you mm-hmm. then don't use,
yeah.
you lose life equal to the number of mana that you didn't spend.
Right, exactly.
But like, I don't even, like, thinking about sort of how cards work, I don't necessarily know how you would get somebody to spend, or to, like, tap mana that wouldn't be spent.
Well, there were like, you'd play a card that would, like, make them add an extra mana to everything, and then if they only had an odd-numbered spell, they'd have to, like, take burn from the extra one. Or, like...
So, like...
I remember there being cards where you could be, like... Like, opponent must draw mana from mm-hmm. all of his lands, and they just don't do stuff like that
so
anymore.
So it'd be the sort of thing, like, if on your first turn you had the Dark Ritual, you played that.
Yeah.
It gives you three, but you're using it to play a two-cost creature.
Yeah.
Then you get burned for that extra one.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Stupid.
It was just...
Real stupid.
That's a rookie move right there.
Yeah.
It was just something that came up so rarely.
Uh-huh.
And, like, was just kind of confusing, like, if you mm-hmm. never heard of it, that it's like, all right, just get rid of it.
And a lot of the rules changes they made were designed around this idea of, like, maybe if we made the game slightly simpler.
Like, you know what, guys? This whole mechanic, it's kind of bullshit.
Yeah,
Let's get rid of it.
Let's just get rid of it. It's possible. I think another firework has gone off.
Okay. Good.
I heard one go off at, like, 11 this morning.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, the biggest rule change, I think, is how combat damage works. It is different. So, back in your day... So, Fred, tell me...
Back in your day...
Tell me your understanding of like, how attacking, blocking, combat damage, that process works.
Okay, so you... And I should say that this is polluted by having played Duels of the Planeswalkers.
Oh,
and so,
okay, nice.
That may have...
Right.
Influenced my memory, but like, so you tap your attacking creatures,
yep.
And your opponent can sort of elect to block creatures with theirs,
mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly, they get to choose which blocker blocks which attacker,
yep.
And then all of the damage goes from that creature, you know, from creature to creature.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's any left over, unless it's trample damage,
mm-hmm.
then it's just sort of wasted damage.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there was stuff like, could you have multiple blockers against one creature?
Yep.
That hasn't changed.
Yeah, that's still the truth.
But then there was something called banding. What was banding?
Oh, God. So banding doesn't exist anymore at all. It was very confusing. It was like, if you had a banding creature on defense, then like you as the defender could choose how the damage was assigned.
Ooh.
And it used to be like and then like normally it's the attacker gets to choose,
mm-hmm.
where he's assigning his damage.
Okay.
They got rid of that because it's super confusing. You could also attack in a band where it was like multiple creatures would act as if they were one attacking creature.
Okay.
And then you could assign the damage as the attacker. It was super weird, you guys.
So when you're talking about like assigning damage, mm-hmm. does it work like, so if I'm attacking you and I've got my Lord of the Pit with his seven trample damage,
yeah.
And you've got like seven defense worth of creatures,
yeah.
blocking it.
Yeah.
I get to decide where those seven damage go amongst them, or...
So, the way it used to work is the combat damage would go on the stack.
Okay.
And then when that resolved, you would assign the damage, and then anything with lethal damage would die. Although, actually, you assigned the damage when the combat damage went on the stack.
Okay.
And then when it resolved, anything that had lethal damage would die. Meaning, after the combat damage was assigned, if you had, like, a giant growth... You could cast it on a creature and save that creature.
Oh.
Or like, say you had something that gave all your creatures +1/+1.
Mm-hmm.
If I had assigned one damage to each one of them, like I could play that and save them all.
Sure. Okay.
And like, there's like very little risk involved with that. They've changed that because it was kind of complicated and like it made things like giant growth, it gave them like a very non-obvious use.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, oh, you could like save that after combat, like as opposed to doing it before to kill your creature or something.
Mm-hmm.
So now the way they do it is you still choose the attackers,
uh-huh.
you still choose blockers the same way. However, after you've chosen to block, if you have multiple blockers, then you as the attacker get to put them in an order. So say you've attacked with your 7/7 trample guy.
Yep.
And I blocked with a 4/4, a 2/2, and another 2/2.
Mm-hmm.
You decide what order you want to put them in.
So basically, assuming that you're not going to do anything to buff them,
right.
I can put them in an order like, these are the ones I want to kill.
Exactly, okay. Yeah. And then after you put them in that order, now I get a chance to play giant growth. So if you put, say you put the 2/2 first,
mm-hmm.
and then a 4/4, and then the 2/2.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to save the 4/4,
mm-hmm.
I can either pump him,
mm-hmm.
which means you'd have to assign the first two damage to the 2/2.
Right.
And then you'd only have five left over for him. Or I could giant growth the 2/2,
mm-hmm.
meaning you'd have to assign five to him and only have two left over,
sure.
for the 4/4. So,
whew.
Is that simpler? I don't know.
I don't know.
One of the other changes was, like, you used to be able to, like, attack, you know, say a creature could be sacrificed to do something.
Yep.
Like, there's a card, Mog Fanatic. You could sacrifice it to do one damage to target creature or player, mm-hmm. and it's a 1/1. You could attack with that creature, wait for them to block, stack the combat damage, then sacrifice it and do another damage to that creature or a damage to a different creature. And now you can't do that. You have to choose, do I want to do it do I want it to do its damage or do I want to sacrifice it?
Mm-hmm.
So things like that made it a little simpler because newer players wouldn't necessarily understand right away that you could attack with this creature and then before it was going to die, sacrifice it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that is the biggest change, and that's something to keep in mind. Ordering blockers.
While we've been chatting, I made a creator card.
Ooh.
Red Panda.
Ooh.
From that fun zoo conversation. Red Panda, he's a 1/1 indestructible. He enters the battlefield tapped, and then it says Red Panda can only untap if you control no other creatures. And he costs 1 white.
He's and his, shy.
Yes, and his flavor text is, "Hey guys, what's going on?"
He's completely oblivious to the fact that all the rest of the zoo has been fucking murdered.
Exactly, that's the idea. Is that he wakes up, he climbs out of his little tree, and he's like, "Hey guys," and then all of the other zoo animals are dead.
But by then, all you're getting is a 1/1
indestructible, Marie.
Oh, okay, explain indestructible. I don't know indestructible.
Oh, okay.
This is a saucy one.
Mm.
It means that damage cannot destroy that creature or a spell that says destroy target creature.
Right. It basically means if it would be destroyed, instead, it no.
Is not.
How do you get rid of them?
Well,
remember when we were talking about exile
earlier? Okay.
You can exile it because that is not destroying it. There are
so
also
if you have like a Swords to Plowshare, okay. Which they don't make anymore.
Okay.
There's also, I don't know if you'll be familiar with these, but cards that can give like -2/-2.
Okay,
to
creature. Yeah. Like a debuff.
Exactly. And so that's not dealing its damage.
It's just weakening them.
Exactly.
Giving it to them.
Exactly.
Like a gift.
Giving it to them like a gift.
And this is how I have to think about it, seriously, you guys. Because to me, I'm like, -2, that's damage.
Mm-hmm.
But like in my mind, we had a show all about damage.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so now we were like, Maria, it's like it's giving it to it like a present. So that's how I have to think about
it. And you
it.
Know, it's funny for that you asked about indestructibility because with M14 coming out, they're changing the rules.
Ooh.
So like the way indestructibility works right now is going to be different than how it works once
Son
the set comes
bitch.
Out. I know.
It's okay, Maria. It's still the same in terms of how you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You still kill all things the same way.
Got it. What if, so anyway, its life total can be reduced to 0.
Okay.
Or its toughness.
It's toughness.
Can be
yeah.
reduced to
if
0.
If its toughness is 0 or less, it's going in the graveyard. No matter how indestructible it is. But it's put into the graveyard as opposed to being destroyed.
It's offered. Yeah. Hey, have this casserole that I brought you. It's going to make you really weak, and you're going to want to take a nap in this box over here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Wow, Fred, this is such a tasty casserole. Thank
yeah.
you.
Are you sleepy?
I'll carry you.
Fred, did you have a creative card you wanted to do or a card of the week?
Oh, man. Card of the week. I don't know. Let me take a quick look at the deck and see if there's something that we didn't talk about here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think there's one card in here that you guys talked about when Nels was on talking and he cracked open his... Oh, wait. No. Even better. Better than that.
Oh.
So I was about to talk about the Maze of Ith, which is like the one useful card from the dark, and it's the only card from the dark.
We did open it on our cracker pack.
But the other one I want to talk about is called Arena.
Arena, enter the arena.
And this card was not part of a set.
No.
It was available. You had to buy a novel. Like they had Magic the Gathering novels.
Megan and Maria are agape.
And if you bought one of the novels, you clipped a little coupon out of the back of the book and sent it in along with postage and handling and $1.95, and you got a card. And for the first couple of novels that they released in the series, I think this was in 95, they had a specific card that was somehow thematically tied to the book.
Yeah.
And the first novel in the series was like, they hadn't really built up the mythology of the game very much.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't a narrative, and so they had to create a narrative. And so it was all about these dueling sorcerers in an arena. And so the arena card, should I read this?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Okay, it's a land. And so you play it as land and 3 mana and tap it to choose one of your creatures and have your opponent choose one of his or her creatures. Both target creatures become tapped. Your creature does its power and damage to your opponent's creature, and your opponent's creature does its power and damage to yours. So it's basically like forced battle between individual creatures.
Kind of like a little bit of a pit fight.
Do you want to hear something funny, Fred?
What?
So right now, the way this card would read is 3 mana tap. Target creature you control fights target creature.
That your opponent chooses, though. Right?
Of your opponent's choice.
Okay, yeah, of your opponent's choice, yeah.
So they boiled all of that text down to like, yes,
they just call it fight. They're like, you know what? It seems like this is coming up a lot. Let's call it fight.
And so, like, I feel like the only reason this card is all that interesting is just because I had to buy a book.
Yeah, definitely.
To get
awesome.
Commitment. Yeah.
Did you actually bought it and like sent in the thing?
Yeah, and I read the novel and it was not very good.
No.
I can imagine not.
No. I can't tell you how many Magic the Gathering novels I've read halfway through.
How many, Ben?
And just sighed. This one.
Really?
And I think one of the original Ravnica Block novels I read part of, and I was like, who is this guy? That was kind of before...
I'm thinking of yourself.
It was...
You looked in the mirror and said, what have I become?
Who am I? This was before they had introduced, like, planeswalkers. There was the concept of planeswalkers in the mythology, but the idea was, like, you're the planeswalkers.
Okay.
So they were never on the cards themselves. But then eventually they're like, if we want planeswalkers to be an actual thing, we should probably
put them on cards.
Yeah. And once they did that, I think that's when the mythology started to come up a lot more because they could have actual characters.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh.
Huh. Go figure.
Well, Fred.
Yes.
Thank you for joining
us. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It was amazing.
I feel like I want to wear flannel and listen to some Nirvana.
Let's do that.
It's really hot out for flannel.
It really is. You said it, though.
I gotta do it now.
Gotta do it. Okay, we're doing it.
Oh, Ben, those are nice flannel sweaty pants.
Hey, guys, you can find us on Twitter at MTAcast.
You can find us on email systems at magictheamateuring@gmail.com.
You can find us on internet
phones
or other enabled devices.
Can I find you on my America Online web browser that they just introduced?
Who probably won't support the JavaScript on our website.
Oh yeah, it's real hardcore JavaScript.
Oh man.
magictheamateuring.com. Subscribe on iTunes to our podcast.
Download it to your iPhone or iPod or third-party bandit device.
Or your eye.
Yeah.
If you have Google Glass.
Just look at it.
Right.
You can also find us on Magic Online
if all you play three on the internet. Us.
All three of us!
Welcome, Megan.
Thank you.
My name is Middle Schooler.
I'm horny_unicorny.
And I'm Ice Cream Socialist.
Fred is dying.
Megan, is that all one word?
That is all one word.
Cool. You can send us a message. I love hearing from listeners.
Yeah.
Even if sometimes I just leave Magic opening and I never see your message because it crashes.
Sorry.
Sorry. Oops. Just keep messaging me until I respond.
You got it.
You got it.
Yeah, we'll see you on the flip side, you guys.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
See you in the exile zone.
Thanks.
Yay. So I missed a million miles of fun.